packages by Expedia. You were made to occasionally take the hard route to the top of the Eiffel Tower. We were made to easily bundle your trip. Expedia, made to travel. Flight-inclusive packages are at all protected.
Hey folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday, we release these special episodes where we look back at content from our earlier years. And folks, if you appreciate what we do at Risk, you can really help us out with a 5-star rating over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podchaser. Those reviews really do help new listeners find us, which helps keep the show going. And my next online storytelling workshop starts on April 8th. You can email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn more. This week, an episode that premiered in December of 2013, it's an episode we call Live from Philly 4. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Kids, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Mark Clark. I mean, now, why? It's not even a funny name. I don't know why I laughed. Mark Clark, God bless him. Folks, today's episode is called Live from Philly 4. We went down to Philly once again. We love the folks at First Person Arts, a wonderful organization they have down there in Philly. They put on all kinds of great shows. Jamie Brunson and James Claiborne always take care of us. And it was a truly lovely evening this time around. Featured one of those stories on our last episode, and here's two more. We're going to start with a dear friend of the show, Dawn J. Fraser, who you can find at dawnjfraser.com. Here she is now with a story we call Brasilado.
I'm sitting at this bar in the beautiful moonlit sky in Rio de Janeiro, Copacabana Beach, Brazil. I look up and I see this huge Christ statue that's like looking out over the entire city as if it's like forgiving all the people for being so damn sexy all at once. I look down and I see all these beautiful people just wandering around, and I'm thinking to myself, this is where I belong. But I'm pretty tipsy and I need to go home. So I call over the waiter and I say, garçon, you know, waiter, bring me the check. But the person sitting directly across from me, Marcy, my Portuguese instructor, stops me and she says, Donnie, wait. Come on, one more. I was like, well, she's my Portuguese instructor. Go ahead, bring one more drink, right? So they go back and he brings me another drink. We hang out, we're eating French fries, we're talking. But now I'm really tipsy, and the garçon, the waiter knows, he's like, oh, this girl definitely is not from here, because unlike everyone else who can handle the liquor after about 5-6 drinks, I definitely cannot. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I'm ready to go. And Marcy says, wait, Donnie, a saideira. And I'm thinking to myself, this is my first week in Portuguese and in Brazil. I'm learning this Portuguese. I don't know what this word is. Saideira, is that the tip? No, that's not the tip. Is that the bathroom? I was like, Marcy, what is the saideira? She's like, it's the word for the drinky after your last drinky. And I was like, there is a word in Portuguese for the drink after the last drink? This place is out of control, but I love it. And this was going to be my year. Marcy with my Brazilian Portuguese instructor. She had this really, like, really sun-kissed skin with these freckles, and, you know, she chain-smoked like a pack of cigarettes a day. It was like as if the guy from the Dos Equis commercial had, like, a younger sister. That would be Marcy. And every single day we would converse, we would chat, and in exchange for these awesome Portuguese classes, all I had to do was to go around and to give speeches to people about what it meant to be an American. And so I was like, oh, I am going to love this job. And so there I am in Brazil. But when I go to give these speeches to different people, it's really kind of difficult because they ask really hard questions. So I'm at this one event, and somebody stands up, and they say, Donnie, why Bushy is your presidency? I said, I don't know why Bush is our president. I didn't vote for that fool, you know? Come on now. And they're like, well, Donnie, why Bushy want to wage war? I don't know why Bush wants to wage war. Because of the oil? I don't know, because he can? You know, and they're like, well, but majority people voted for Bushy? I said, well, no, actually, the majority of people did not vote for Bush, but I don't know how to explain that in Portuguese, so I'm not gonna even try it, you know, don't even bother. But you guys have it right. This is Brazil. I mean, look at this. You guys have a progressive president. You have world-class soccer and samba and sexies, my favorite three S's. You know, you guys got this right. I want to become more and more Brazilian. And the more that I thought about it, I really didn't want to have this identity because America to me was everything that was wrong at the time. We were at war and there was corruption and I just didn't feel it. And so I wanted to be Brazilian. And so I said to myself, okay, this is the way I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna learn the ways of being Brazilian through Marcy, my instructor. And so she agreed to it. So it was awesome because unlike anything I've ever done at UCLA, this was very informal. I mean, it was her job to get me drunk so I could speak better Portuguese. Not a bad scenario. But then when we wanted to learn about different fruits, she would take me to the grocery store. She'd say, okay, this pineapple, abacaxi. And I repeat, okay, abacaxi. This fish, peixe. I was like, okay, cool, peixe, got it. And that's how I learned the language. And when I needed to learn how to get around, she's like, okay, we're gonna go in the car. And when we get to the stop sign, you don't stop, okay? I said, what? She's like, no, just flash the lights, give a little beep of the horn and keep on going or else you're gonna get carjacked. I was like, what? So I learned how to drive in the streets of Rio. And then in order to learn how to cuss, she took me to a soccer game. Of course, puts me in a big red jersey. And when the other team scores, she's like, okay, this is what you're gonna do. You're gonna yell out, vai tomar no cu! I was like, what does that mean? She's like, it means take it up the ass. And I was like, okay, cool. Vai tomar no cu. She's like, no, Don. No. Say, vai tomar no cu. And I was like, okay, vai tomar no cu. She's like, yes, like a true Brazilian. I was like, yeah. And I was getting it. I was feeling it. I was like, I like being Brazilian. This is hot. This is sexy, you know? But then I go to a Brazilian bikini store and I try on a bikini and look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not that Brazilian yet. But you know, I'm working on it. I'm working on my swag. I'm working on my language and all this type of stuff. So we're having a great time. And a couple of months into it, we go out to this party about an hour outside of Rio. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning when we're coming home. Dead tired. And as our taxi comes into the city, there's a police security point. And so we pull off on the side of the road, and the police come over to the car, and they start asking, where are you guys coming from? And Marcy answers, oh, we're just coming from a party outside of town, just having a good time, just trying to get back home. And they say, okay, well, do you have anything illegal in the car? And she says, no, we don't have anything illegal, that's stupid. And the police say, okay, well, would you mind coming out of the taxi? And I turned to her and I was like, what is going on? She's like, don't worry about it. Just come on out. Just get out of the taxi. I say, okay. So we get out of the taxi. Police walk over and they start opening everything. They start looking under the hood, start looking under the wheels, opening the glove compartment. I was like, what are they doing? She's like, don't worry about it, just let it go. And then they come over to me and they're like, can we see your bag, please? I don't know what's going on. So I was like, okay, I guess, sure. So I give them my purse. And they start going through all the little compartments of my purse. And I start sweating. And I'm like, what are they doing? What are they looking for? And they pull out this little gift bag that I had gotten from the party. And they walk over to Marcy. And they say, so what is this? Marcy looks at me. And she's like, I don't know. What is it? And I reply, I'm sorry. I was at the party. And, you know, I was hanging out with those guys. Got a little gift bag, and the little gift bag has a little tiny bit of weed in it. And she says, what? I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know, I'm from San Francisco. Like, you know, this isn't cool here. She's like, no, it's not cool here. I'm like, okay, my bad. I'm, you know, what are we gonna do? So she starts talking to them, and she wants to try and just get us out of this situation. She's explaining, oh, I'm sorry. This is a foreign exchange student. She's here as an ambassador of goodwill. And even though I was only 22 years old, the ambassador title made me feel pretty damn good and important. But the police decide to take this as a sign that, oh, she's American. Nice. Interesting. So they come over to me and they ask, so is this your weed? And I say, no, I'm sorry, it's not. I was taking it from the party to, you know, some other people in Rio. My bad, you know. And they say, okay. They walk back over to Marcy, and all I hear is, bop, 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 bop. I was like, what is going on? And Marcy comes back over to me, and she's like, what are you telling them? I was like, I don't know. I told them it was mine. I told them, I was like, you know, this is somebody else's in the city. She said, well, now they think que você es un traficante, that you are a drug trafficker. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm not no drug trafficker. She's like, well, that's what people do if they're taking drugs from one place to another. I was like, oh my God, are you freaking kidding me? No, no. Look, can you please talk to them? Just get us out of the situation. This is not good. And so she starts talking, bop, 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 back and forth and back and forth. And they come back over to me, and they are going to want some money. I have been in Brazil now at this point for about 7 months, living off of rice and beans and basically nothing so I could stay for as long as I possibly can because I'm still trying to be Brazilian, right? But I have no money, and I've severed all my ties with all my American friends because I wasn't in Brazil to learn English. I was in Brazil to learn Portuguese, and so I don't have any friends. And she's like, well, you need to make some friends right now because if you ain't got no money, you're not getting home. So I call up one friend who I had met on a study abroad program, and I was like, go to Lauren's house. Maybe she'll be able to help you. It's 3:00 in the morning, but we'll see. And so she jumps in the taxi, and she leaves to go to Rio. And I'm sitting there, hostage by the Brazilian police on the side of the road, waiting for my Brazilian Portuguese teacher to come back for money for the police so I can be let free. And I'm like, oh, crap. How did I get myself in this situation? And so I'm just pacing back and forth on the side of the road, pacing and pacing and pacing. And I'm like looking at these police officers, and they're not much older than me, but they're carrying these AK-47s. I don't know where the hell I'm at. This is not a good situation. It's 4:00 in the morning, and now it's 5:00 in the morning, and I don't know if Marcy's coming back for me. And so the police come over to me, and they're like, look, we're going to have to take you to another spot because you know, this is taking a long time. And I said, wait, hold on a second. You told my friends we're going to meet them at this spot. You told me that you would not leave. You promised me, like, do not leave. Do not take me from this place. They said, no, look, we've spoken to the taxi driver and your friend. They're meeting us at this other location. And I'm like, okay, I guess I have no other choice, right? So I sit in the back of the police car with these huge AK-47s and these six police officers. We drive somewhere, and then they stop, and I get back out of the car, and I'm pacing. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. And finally, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I can't even get any type of reality stardom out of this because, you know, Locked Up Abroad is not on the air yet. This is like a lose-lose situation if they do not come back for me, okay? Finally, at 6 o'clock in the morning, Marcy comes back. She walks over to one of the officers. She gives him the cash. I look over. They give me a nod. And I go back to the taxi where Marcy and I had originally been 4 hours earlier on our way back into the city. And I'm mad, and I'm like, I'm so aggravated. And she looks at me, she's like, what's the matter? I was like, what the hell was that? Like, how can the police just go, can they just go through my stuff like that? And she looks at me and she's like, yeah, they can just go through your stuff like that. And I say, but why? I mean, why can they do that? They have that right. At least in the States, I would have some type of probable cause, you know, some type of rights. They can just do that? And she's like, yes, they can just do that. And I turn and I was like, oh, police, Vito Manuku! She's like, very good, very good. You're learning the language. And I was so mad. I didn't know what was going on because from the time I had gotten there, I had been pro-American and then I was pro-Brazilian. But as we drove back into the city and as I finally calmed down from such a crazy and adventurous night, one thing that I knew for sure was that I was happy and grateful for my freedom. Thanks.
What I've dedicated my life to is revenge.
A brand new drama based on the best-selling novel.
They think they're better than us.
Who do you think you are?
I'm going to prove to them that they're wrong.
She's punishing me.
You destroyed my family. I will not rest until I've destroyed yours.
A Woman of Substance on Channel 4. Stream now.
McDonald's cards are here. 24 cards to find and free food in every pack. Enter cards in the McDonald's app and complete sets with over £4 million in cash prizes to be won. McDonald's cards. 18 plus UK only with selected meals subject to availability. Ends 27th of April. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
There once was a woman who lived in a shoe. A size too snug, but what could she do? But that's not where her story ends. Thanks to a little help from her Experian friends, she got her score into much better shape and relocated to a box-fresh new place with room to grow and a mortgage to suit. Now, she lives in a spacious four-bedroom cowboy boot. Better your Experian credit score to help get mortgage ready. Experian. Better your score. Better your story.
Another. This is Risk, and this is Radiation City. Behind me now, our final story today comes from the lovely Katie Sampson. She may have to get around in a wheelchair, but she sure as hell gets around. She's told so many unforgettable stories for the First Person Arts organization down there in Philly, so we're just thrilled to finally have her on the show. Here she is now. This is Katie Sampson with a story we call The First Time Again.
So I'm 20 years old. I'm at a park with some friends. It's evening time. I'm on winter break from college, my sophomore year, and I'm home with some friends, and we go to this park, and we decide to go sledding. I jump in a sled at the top of the hill. I hit my first jump. There's two guys sitting behind me, and we lose control of the sled. I let go, and I fly through the air, and I land right on my neck. Snapped. It snapped. And I instantly knew that I had broken my neck. And the paralysis was instant, to the point where I had been freezing my ass off on top of the hill, and this warmth flows through me. And the paralysis was instant to the fact that I fell at the top of the hill, and I slowly felt my body floating all the way down to the bottom because I couldn't feel my body hit the ground repeatedly, time after time after time. I landed on top of a friend, and I said, "I can't move. You need to go and get someone." And I sat with another friend holding my hand. The ambulance came. I was driven to a nearby helicopter, and I was flown to Jefferson University Hospital here in Philadelphia, where they performed a spinal subluxation. They fused the bone from my hip to my neck, 3 inches of titanium. I spent the next 6 months in a rehab hospital here in Philadelphia, one of the best rehab hospitals in the country, McGee. 2 years later, I'm actually back at college. But it was one of those situations where I had slowly made these milestones. I had been through learning about having the disability, figuring out the wheelchair, learning how to transfer myself, bathing myself, all these things. And I was back at college in my last semester without my mother. Because you see, my mom had come back to college with me. And it's not the type of dream that you envision for yourself as a young college student. Especially when it comes to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And all those things had happened for me prior to my time having my sledding accident. And it was one of those situations where I really wanted to experience my senior year without my mom. I was a selfish 22-year-old kid. And so we decided to hire a friend to come and live with me as my roommate, as well as she was a nurse. And she was a little bit younger, and she knew that she had to sort of stay out of my way a little bit. So things were starting to fall into place as far as all of these little milestones my senior year. I had gotten back involved with sports. I had been a lacrosse player my freshman year. My team had won the national championship. The team had brought me back as a student coach. We won the national championship again. I decided to take a modern dance class in a wheelchair with 30 freshman football players, which was terrifying and awesome. I had made new friends, friends that didn't know me before I had my spinal cord injury, which was so fantastic. But the romance really wasn't falling into place. And, you know, I had had a successful career romantically. When I was 12, I had my first kiss with my summer sweetheart on the beach in Westport Harbor, Massachusetts. You know, we swapped some saliva. I think there was a boob grab over the bathing suit. I shouldn't really say boob. It was more like mosquito bite or
like a
tablespoon of mashed potatoes that he was feeling there. I don't know. You know, cut to like late teenage years, my losing of my virginity happened on summer vacation with my family and my grandparents, with a week-long stay at a resort in Florida, to which at the end of the week I had been having sex with our waiter. And my grandmother asked my grandfather how much we should tip the waiter, and he says, "I think Katie already took care of that." Yeah, so that happened. My freshman year of college, I had had an altercation in a dorm room with a young man in which I was performing a sexual act, and the fire alarm went off, and I was just so embarrassed because I couldn't do the act on the rhythm with the fire alarm, and then I started doing it on the rhythm against the fire alarm, and it just wasn't working with the fire alarm, if you know what I'm saying. So that just didn't go as well as I had hoped. You know, when I was in rehab, I remember all of these times where people were... I had a friend that had sent me a book called Enabling Romance, you know, for those times when you are in a wheelchair and you want to, you know, get your groove back. I remember my physical therapist slipping a VHS in my room at one point and having to sit through these painful, painful videos, black and white videos of men in wheelchairs having sex with their wives or caregivers, who knows. But there was no women doing those things. There's no women in wheelchairs. And so that was really confusing to me. But I don't know. I just thought, you know, like it wasn't going to happen. Or worst case scenario, like if it happened, something really awkward would happen along with it. I'd like fall out of my chair or the guy would wimp out or something. So homecoming weekend, I'm with some of my best friends that are back visiting on campus. And we decide to go to a kind of keg party of sorts. And I have to mention this because I think it's really significant to this story. I have a friend who has his doctoral in disability studies, and he has this theory about people who've suffered a spinal cord injury and their recovery in social life and cultural life. And he says that for every year post-spinal cord injury, you increase your age by 4 years. So the first year you have a spinal cord injury, you're 4 years old. You're brought down to almost an infant level. The second year, you're 12. The third, or I'm sorry, math, you're 8. I was told there'd be no math tonight. Yeah, 8, right, 12. So I'm going into my third year, 12 years, right? Okay, we're back. So, you know, I'm in my early adolescence. I'm like, you know, I've sent mom home. I'm with my roommate slash nurse. That's pretty cool. I'm out with friends. I'm going to do something dangerous. So we go to this party, and I'm reconnecting with people, and I see this guy from across the room that I recognize. And his name is Sam, and he had graduated a few years before. And we start talking, and he's very funny, and yet I can tell that he's kind of the goofball of his friends, and they're coming up and hugging him and saying, like, you know, hey, how's it going? And he's asking me questions about lacrosse and about coming back to college. And then at some point I realize that I have to get out of this dormitory and be carried out, because the more the night progresses, the less sober people in the party are. And public safety on campus did not want me in houses late at night in case there was a fire. So I was not only a fire hazard, but I was kind of like the, you know, the party downer at times. It's like, oh, we gotta carry the girl in a wheelchair out. No one get too drunk tonight. So he volunteers to actually pick me up and lift me back up out of the house. And then he asks if he can walk me home. And I remember my best friend was there, and she's like giving me the stink eye, like, I don't know about this. And he says something just so incredibly charming. He's like, I can take care of her, you know, I got this. And so he walks me back, and I'm blabbering, nervous wreck, because I still don't have it in my mind that anything's actually going to happen. Like, we're going to have this sort of, like, hug goodbye, this awkward hug where he's going to come down with, like, one arm and give me a little pat-pat and send me into my apartment. And then we get back, and I live, like, three houses down practically from where this party's happening. So it was a short walk. And I'm sort of just figuring out how I'm going to say goodbye. And he's, like, asking me if he can see my apartment. And I'm like, did I just fucking Jedi mind trick this guy? Like, what is happening? What is happening? So I welcome him. I, like, give him a little tour. Like, here's my bedroom. Here's living room, kitchen. Can I get you a beer? And he's like, do you think I could sleep over? And I'm like, on the couch? And he's like, no, I'd like to spend the night with you. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. I have a roommate. She's going to help me into bed because I don't think I want you to deal with all that sort of stuff. And why don't you sit here? Here's a magazine. Here's a beer. Well, just, like, ring a bell when I'm ready. So I go and knock on my roommate's door, and she comes out, not knowing that anyone's there. She's just woken up. And she's like, how was the party? And I'm like, shh, there's a boy in the living room. And she looks over and sees his legs crossed, like, sticking out of the living room. And she looks at me, and I look at her, and we start jumping up and down. There's a boy in the living room. There's a boy in the living room. There's a boy in the living room. Oh, my God. And I'm like, I'm happy. I'm elated. I'm excited. I start to get this, like, Public Enemy song in my head. Like, I got game. She's got game. Who's got game? We're having this, like, mad tribal dance party silently in my living room. And I'm, like, flapping my wings. Like, I don't know what's happening. And I have to calm down because I have to make this magic moment happen. So she helps me get into bed with, I use a transfer board, and I'm like, you know, she's like, do I get undressed? Like, no, I don't want to assume that that's going to happen. Like, and I wasn't, to be honest, ready, because keep in mind, I'm still 12 years old. It's kind of a weird scenario, but yeah, stick with me on it. It just got really weird, didn't it? Yeah. Yeah, okay. So anyway, I put on some Pete Yorn, first album. Forgot that I had left the CD player on repeat. We'll come back to that. So I'm in bed. I'm sort of, like, half-dressed, like, kind of half-undressed. I'm not really sure. I think my roommate sort of goes to her room and... she's like, okay, have a good night. And as, like, signaling, you know, like, we're ready for you. So he kind of gives a little knock and, you know, walks in. And he's, like, 6'5" and tall. He's really tall. And he's got red hair and, like, kind of scraggly beard. And I'm, like, really seeing him for the first time, like, in my fucking bedroom. And I, you know, I'm so awkward. I'm like, come on in. The water is warm here. So this has not happened to me before. And I'm just like, I'm just going to talk through how nervous I am. And I sort of just say, like, can we just be together and maybe not, like, be together tonight? Because I just don't know if I'm ready for that. But I'm so glad you're here. And he kind of just calms me down. He holds my hand. He sort of pats it a little bit. And we start talking. And he asks me, like, where I can feel, where I can't feel. And surprisingly enough, with spinal cord injury, you can lose your motor function and still have your sensory function. Yeah. So we talk about that a little bit. And then he caresses my face, and we kiss. And it's like there's this Old Spice meets Natural Light going on in his mouth a little bit. And it's lovely, and it's, like, warm, and sweet and compassionate, and then he falls asleep. And I'm sitting there with my wide eyes looking at this man in my bed and really believing it for the first time that I had made this magic moment happen. And then Pete Yorn goes back to the first song. And then I realize I had left the CD player on repeat and I could not fall asleep. And I'm like, there's a man in my bed. I brought him here. I made this happen. This is so exciting. I could not fall asleep. I was awake the entire night, like pinching him. Like, is he real? Yeah. Is he gonna be there when I couldn't fall asleep because I didn't think he was gonna be there when I woke up. That's what it was all about. So, you know, dawn approaches, birds are chirping, and he stirs, and I sort of fake stir. Oh, yeah. Wow, what a night's sleep. Oh, how are you doing? Yeah. Want to get breakfast? How is this going to end? And he has to catch a ride back to New York, and we have this really sweet, gentle conversation. He kind of helps me get out of bed, and I walk him outside, and, you know, I'm sort of thinking, you know, I'm probably never going to see him again. Who knows? But we just had this great night, and it was just such a sweet and charming person. The rest of the day, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't get all the fucking song lyrics of Pete Yorn songs out of my head, first of all. And second of all, I was exhausted, but I was so emotional because I was just walking down the sidewalk. I'd go into a store, and everyone I'd meet, I'd be like, you want to know what I did last night? Like, I wanted to call my physical therapist. I wanted to call, like, my best friend. I wanted to call ESPN and get a play-by-play, you know? Like, how did that go? Where was that hand? Oh, right. Yeah, nice. I wanted to call my mom. Oh, I wanted to call my mom and tell her, like, I brought a boy home. Oh, that's weird. A couple hours later, I turned on the computer, and he has already emailed me. And the email is in the inbox. Like, it exists. And he's actually had feelings and wants to connect with me virtually, not physically. I'm actually not going to tell you what the email said because it was really, it was private. It was between the two of us. I've never gotten anything like it in my life. I've never felt so connected to someone, and I've never felt so proud of myself for going through with it, to getting my life back, to having a moment with someone who could see me for the person that I was and not for my disability or not for my difference. And it was the best type of connection I could have ever had. And I knew from that day forward that I had some serious game. Thank you.
That's it for this week, folks. This is Boombox Seance behind me now. Hey, if you want to get someone in your life an unforgettable gift for the holidays, how about some one-on-one storytelling coaching sessions over Skype with me? Everyone loves those sessions. I know I do. And you can go get them as well as gift certificates. Since I was a little goddamn boy, I have said certificates. get gift certificates for all of our workshops at thestorystudio.org. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Let you clean up, and I'll meet you outside.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.